Moramai, good morning. This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Today I have a couple of guests with special reason for joining us on this particular day. Reverend Richard Hall and his wife Ruth are preparing for retirement as Richard completes 9 years as Chair of District, leader of the Methodist Church here on the island. In a few moments, he'll be reflecting on his life as an ordained minister. But first, I asked Richard to choose some music for us.
Music has always been something that inspires and lifts me, and that's probably reflected in the hymns that I have chosen for this morning. The hymn that I've been using over this last few weeks is a newer one. It's by Keith Getty and Stuart Townend, entitled Speak, O Lord. In the third verse, it contains words that for me are incredibly powerful. Speak, O Lord, and renew our minds. Help us grasp the heights of your plans for us. Truths unchanged from the dawn of time that will echo down through eternity.
Speak, O Lord, and renew our minds. Help us grasp the heights of your plans for us. Truths unchanged from the dawn of time that will echo down through eternity. And by grace we'll stand on your promises, and by faith church is built and the earth is filled with your glory.
We have to serve the present age. We have to do what's relevant to today. So we've all learnt about Zoom and YouTube, and even I've been editing videos and all the rest of it. But the truths that we are trying to share with people don't change. They haven't changed since the dawn of time, and they won't change for eternity, because they're about God's love and they're about the presence of the Holy Spirit in our lives. And yes, over the generations, we've shared those in different ways, but those unchanging truths are the things that are at the heart of ministry, and all the rest is just a way of getting the message over.
Speak, O Lord. As we come to you to receive the food of your holy word, take your truth planted deep in us, shape and fashion us in your likeness, that the might be seen today in our acts of love and our deeds of faith. Speak, O Lord, and fulfill in us all your purposes for your glory.
Speak, O Lord, performed there by Keith and Kristin Getty, and there'll be another of Richard's music choices later in the programme. In the Methodist Church, traditionally a minister doesn't retire. He or she sits down.
Yes, that's the traditional term. We're known traditionally as Mr. Wesley's travelling preachers, and after a number of years of travelling, given permission to sit down. Yeah.
How are you viewing the future, Richard?
Looking forward to in many ways, because it will give us new opportunities. We love the island and it's a great place to be. But always in ministry, there's a time to move on. And if you don't move on, then you get stuck. And God has something good waiting for us. I haven't got a clue what it is at the moment, but we go and we'll find out. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Let's go back to early days, Richard. What drew you into ordained ministry? Because you're a man of various talents. There's lots of other things that you have done and could do.
Yes, I was a woodwork teacher and morphed into being a technology teacher as the world changed. But I think from the age of about probably 13, 14, I had felt a call to some kind of full-time service in the church. But the time wasn't right. I strongly believe that you need some experience of the world before you go into ministry. You know, at one time the pattern was school, university, and then a lifetime of ministry. And I'm sure that for some people that worked, but it wouldn't have worked for me. And within our Methodist system, before you can offer for ordained ministry, you have to be a lay preacher and have been a lay preacher for a number of years. So that was the first. Once I was teaching, I felt that call. We were up in the northeast in the Loftus and Staithe circuit near Whitby. And that's where I began my local preacher's training and began to preach on the circuit. As with all these things, it's quite fascinating how God works. We were now living in South Yorkshire, in Mexborough, and we'd come to the point where we were convinced it was time to follow a call into some kind of full-time ministry with the church. And so I actually got involved with the Wesleyan Reform Union, which is one of the very few bits of Methodism that didn't come back in when we joined together in 1932. And they were advertising for a national youth officer. And I thought, that's right up my street. That feels absolutely right. And I went through the process and I was offered the job. And I came home, and across the road from us was our minister. And I said to Ruth, we've got to go and see Peter, and we've got to tell him that I've got this wonderful job offer and we're going to be leaving. And he was very surprised, but very pleased for us. And after having sat down and told him and had a cup of coffee with him and prayed about it, we went home. And I looked at Ruth and she looked at me and we both said, what are we running away from? I'm just on the verge of accepting a job, which is going to take me away probably every weekend. We're going to be living in Sheffield, but working all over the country. And yet, we've been for a long time now, we've been saying this call to ordained ministry is just, it's just too tough. It makes too many demands. So the very next day I went to see Peter, who by now, poor man, was terribly confused. Said, I'm not taking that job, but I do want to offer for the Methodist ministry. It's almost as if, you know, that opportunity opened up so that we would face the reality of what it looked like. And then God said, yeah, okay, that I'm glad you were obedient in that, but actually this is the way that I want you to go. And I think God does that frequently. We try and push on doors and God can just kind of tweak it and steer us to where he wants us to be. It takes time to candidate for ministry. So to let go of what I knew I could have and pursue something that ultimately might not happen, that was the challenge, but it was the right one. Jesus frequently says in the Bible, where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. And we quote that as a kind of a justification because there aren't very many of us here tonight. And it's not that. If you go back just before where Jesus says that, he's talking about Christians and a process of discernment. And what I see over and over again in the Gospels is that we're not meant to make it up on our own. Jesus never sends out one disciple. He sends them out in twos. He sends them out in groups of seven. But they're always together. And I think this business of making decisions, discerning whether somebody's call is right, it's got to be corporate. And within the process of candidating for Methodist ministry, it's very much corporate. You appear amongst an awful lot of different groups who help you to pray through and discern what the calling might be. And in fact, for me, it was a bit of a shock that the candidating process that I ended up in took me back to Sheffield, the place where I grew up, and the panel of august people sat around me. Most of them knew me when I was in Sunday school. And one particular lady said to me, Richard, when you went into teaching, did you consider that to be a vocation? And I said, yes, absolutely. So why do you now think you need to give up that vocation and move on? I said, because God moves us along step by step. And yes, that was very much a calling. And now God's calling in a different direction. And so we must lay that aside and move on. As we went through 3 years at theological college, there was a process, first of all, of designation, which in those days was Are you going to be designated to serve at home or overseas? Because we're ordained to a world church. And I was very clear in my mind that it wasn't for overseas, although I was challenged by the principal who said to me, you do realise you're a prime candidate for overseas ministry. And I said, why is that, Donald? Donald Eady, who was our principal at the time. So why is that, Donald? He said, well, you're young, you're fit, and you're a craftsperson. And I said, Donald, if what you mean is I should be going abroad to help people build houses, I could have done that without doing 3 years at theological college. It just doesn't feel right. And he accepted that quite graciously. By the time the next year came, and you have to kind of just state a bit of a, where do you feel God is calling you in general terms, bearing in mind that the church is going to send you where it wants anyway. And by then the principal had changed. It was now Henry McKeating. Ruth was in on this as well. And Henry said, on your form, Richard, you've put that you feel a call to rural ministry. He said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, I mean rural ministry. He said, yeah, but let's just be clear about this. He said, some people, depending on their experience, when they say rural, they mean Nottingham. Some people, when they say rural, they mean the Outer Hebrides. Which do you mean? And I said, I couldn't tell you, Donald, but we feel a strong call to supporting the rural work. And if that means the Outer Hebrides, so be it. In fact, we were sent to Lincolnshire, which in those days was the second most remote district in Methodism after the Shetland Isles, judged by the number of people for the landmass, you know. So 10 years in rural ministry in Lincolnshire, and then we moved on to Cumbria, 8 years in Ambleside, which was a different kind. It wasn't agricultural, but it was certainly rural. And then from there up to the market town of Penrith in the Eden Valley, and then here.
Whilst he was in Cumbria, Richard served as Synod Secretary, which he compares in school terms as being like the deputy head teacher, while the school head teacher is the chair of district. As Synod Secretary, Richard became used to being a member of various committees and attending conferences. So 9 years ago, when the post of chair of district, leader of the Methodist Church here on the island, became available, he felt that he had sufficient experience to make the move. So now, after 9 years in the post, as Reverend Richard Hall prepares to sit down, what, I wondered, does he feel about the future of the Methodist Church here on the island?
In the whole of my time, and for a good long time before, there has never been a time when the Isle of Man circuit has not had somebody, at least one person, in training as a local preacher. That's a huge sign that something is right. And at the moment, we've got about five or six people who are exploring and training for ordained ministry. That's not to say that we don't face some real challenges. And I guess one of the biggest challenges that we face here is the number of buildings, to put it bluntly. There was a time, almost in living memory, when there were 100 Methodist churches on the Isle of Man. And as you drive around, you see chapels that have been changed into houses all over the place. We're now at 29, but frankly, if we were sitting down with a blank sheet and planning to organise the Methodist Church on the Isle of Man, we wouldn't be looking at 29 buildings. I wouldn't like to put a figure on what we would be looking at, but it certainly wouldn't be that number. And that stretches people. I hear people constantly who are weary of having to maintain a building, keep the roof on with a very small number of people. So I think one of the challenges is to enable people to be liberated from that. And something I've always held on to in my ministry is that the point of a Methodist circuit is that we are one church. We happen to meet in a number of different places, but we are one church. And I think increasingly, and as the future unfolds, that will have to be the message here, that people come together and decide where strategically where do we need to be. One of the features of Methodism is that the members of each church, each society, are independent in the sense that they decide whether they keep the building, whether they stay where they are or not, and we can't make that decision for them. In many ways, I wish we could, because lots of people feel a great burden, a great kind of guilt, and if we could lift that off them, that would help. But at the same time, it's right, we're a lay movement, we're locally based. But we do have to find out here and across How do we adjust what we're doing to best harness the wind of the Spirit and be effective in mission for God in this generation? There are huge opportunities and real challenges, and we have to grasp them.
We began our conversation with music chosen by Richard, and we're going to end the same way.
Back at the beginning of 2020, I had a period of sabbatical, and Ruth and I intended to spend the first month in the UK revisiting places where we'd been in ministry, and then the next 2 months with our family in America. In the end, we had to cut that very short and come home. But whilst we were doing our tour around the UK, we revisited Ambleside, where I'd been a minister, and where, in fact, I'd been responsible for the selling of a Methodist church building, which we had converted into social housing for local residents, and along with the Anglicans, the building of a new building in the town. And we went and we looked at the old Methodist church, and there's a stone plaque on the wall there, and it says, "This place for many years was the home of the Methodist congregation before they moved to their new building in Rothay Park." And then it quotes these words, "'Tis Jesus the first and the last, whose spirit shall guide us safe home. We'll praise him for all that is past and trust him for all that's to come."
'Tis Jesus the first and the last, whose spirit shall guide us safe home.
This hymn, it's the one that if you get a gathering of Methodists, you don't need to get the books out. They will sing, this is the God we adore, our faithful, unchangeable friend, whose love is as great as his power and neither knows measure nor end. And that understanding that wherever we happen to be on life's journey at this particular moment, we're about praising God for all that's past, actually the good and the bad, but also trusting him for all that's to come, because the future is completely unknown. But God knows the rest, and that's all that we need to know. So we'll praise him for all that is past and trust him for all that's to come.
This is the God we adore, our faithful, unchangeable friend, whose love is as great as his power.
Thanks to Reverend Richard Hall for joining me this morning, and we wish him and his wife Ruth a long and happy retirement. Next Sunday, the 11th of July, there'll be a farewell service for Reverend Richard and Ruth. It'll be an United All-Ireland service where members of the other Ireland Methodist churches will gather together at Trinity Church at Rosemount here in Douglas. It's at 10:30 next Sunday morning, and the celebration is open to everyone. I wonder if, like me, you enjoyed reading the full-page article in this week's Manx Independent telling the remarkable story of Mrs. Olive Dobson, who today celebrates 80 years of playing the harmonium in Abilands Chapel. Olive first played in Abilands on the first Sunday in July in 1941, and she's been playing there ever since. It's an inspiring story of dedicated service, and I thought it would be nice to listen again to a conversation that I recorded with Olive when she celebrated 75 years of continuous service at Abilands. Incidentally, Olive also went to help out at Onchan Methodist Church when Gordon Astle left to be organist at the parish church. It was intended to be a temporary arrangement until they found a new organist. But Olive stayed for 50 years, playing in Onchan and Abilands each Sunday. Olive, Abilands Chapel, you grew up just about a mile away, didn't you?
Yeah, born up in the hills. Went to Sunday school when I was 3. Done my first singing solo when I was 3 there. I started to play the piano. Went to lessons when I was 8. Wouldn't do theory. I just enjoyed the practical side of it. parents used to sit at night and I'd play the piano to entertain them.
Was there a lot of music in the family?
Only on my mother's side. Yes, she was good to sing. And my grandfather was good to sing. Apparently, he had a sister. They came from Macleod. He had a sister called Maggie. And the story goes that she played the organ as well down in Macleod. I can't remember now what the name of the chapel was. But they do say that she would hear her singing the other side of the valley. So she must have had a good voice. And I remember my grandfather coming over to visit. Not often that happened in those days, back in the 40s it would be. And I had to sing for him. And he told me I had a voice like a young bull. Now, I don't know what that meant. But he came over the following year, and again I had to sing, but I hadn't proved then. He had rather a sharp tongue. But anyway, it didn't put me off singing.
I'm very pleased to hear that. Now, everything changed when you were 11. Tell us what happened then, Olive. Yeah.
Well, they had no organist at Abbeylands. The minister in charge was the Reverend Harry Williams, and his wife was more or less in charge of the Sunday school at Abbeylands, I think. But anyway, she was certainly in charge of practising the hymns for the anniversary, and she asked me to see if I would play for the children. And they got W.H. Chapman. He was the, you may not know the name, he was an auctioneer and he played the organ at Salisbury Street Chapel. And they asked him to come to play for the congregational hymns and the quartet that was going to sing, male quartet. Anyway, I'd done that. I was never nervous playing for anybody, you know. My mother always had kittens, but it didn't bother me. So I got through that. And after the anniversary, which was always held on the first Sunday in July, the trustees of the chapel must have thought I'd coped quite well. They wrote a letter to my parents asking to see would they mind if I started to play the organ for them. So they gave permission. I don't know that I was asked, but anyway, I don't think I was. But anyway, that's beside the point. I started playing in 1941. I've got proof of that. There's a hymn sheet and everything down at home with all that in it. In those days, there was two services at Sunday, afternoon and night. So that would involve 10 hymns. They were very good, the preachers. They used to send the hymns 2 or 3 weeks beforehand to me with lists. And I would take them to my music teacher and she'd put me through them. So I knew I was right. Playing came easy. I can play by ear. And my music teacher used to cover the keyboard with a sheet of music and I'd have to read. She said, I don't know whether... She didn't know whether I was playing by ear or playing by memory. I can play anything from memory, you know, if I've done it often enough. A lot of the stuff I do now is by memory. And I spent, going back to my teenage years, I worked on the farm, not for wages. I got pocket money and they were spent on sheet music. The modern stuff, you know, that was on the radio all the time then. And with playing all those constantly, I suppose, I can still play them these days. It's just something I can do. I suppose I've got a gift of some sort. I like making music. It's a job to beat hymns, you know.
What would be a favourites at the chapel at that time?
They never had the chance for favourites then. They didn't have songs of praise like they have now. It was just straightforward, serious services. There was no humour, no humour whatever in the preaching in those days. It was hellfire and sin, you know, and whatever. To me, it's a good tune that makes a hymn. If the words are good, that's an added bonus. I like a lot of music, a lot of hymns. I don't look back, I'm afraid. I've got to really think deep to try and remember what happened years ago. I tend to look forward all the time.
Yeah.
At 3 o'clock this afternoon, there'll be a service in Abbeylands to celebrate with Mrs. Olive Dobson. The service will be led by Reverend Richard Hooton and Reverend Steve Ingrell. And Olive's son-in-law, Keith Watterson, says it'll just be the usual service, nothing elaborate, just a chance for everyone who wishes to come along to acknowledge Olive's great contribution to worship in Abbeylands and in Onchan Methodist Church over so many years. And now let's take a look at the rest of this week's notice board. And there are three Sunday school anniversary services today. Bride Methodist Church have their Sunday school anniversary service at 4 o'clock. Reverend Sean Turner will lead it, and there'll be items from the children, and it'll be followed by afternoon tea. And this evening, Cool Methodist Chapel celebrate their Sunday school anniversary with a service at 6:30, led by Reverend Richard Hall. There'll be special items from the Sunday school children and refreshments afterwards. And also at 6:30 tonight, Bagarrow have their anniversary service led by Mrs. Pauline Corlett with soloist Dan Quayle. And the Isle of Man Flower Festival we were talking about on last week's programme opened yesterday in St John's Mill. There are around 30 individual displays all around the mill building, most of them created by the island's churches. St John's Mill will be open again today and tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And you can find more details on the website, flowerfest.im, or search Facebook for Isle of Man Flower Festival. There's also a green pilgrimage involving the churches in the west of the island, who are displaying local flowers and showing ways that we can live greener, more sustainable lives. You can pick up a passport to guide you round the green pilgrimage, either from St John's Mill when you visit the Flower Festival there, or from any one of the participating churches, Kirkmichael Parish Church, Patrick Church, Old St Runius, the Cathedral in Peel, and St James's Church in Dalby. As well as taking part in the Green Pilgrimage, there'll be an anniversary celebration at Dalby Church tonight at 6:30 with the choir Manx Voices and positive green stories from local people with different backgrounds, all celebrating green achievements. Tea, sandwiches and cake will be served after the service, to which everyone is warmly welcomed. The Green Pilgrimage passport is available from all the participating churches and is really helpful as the opening days and times are different for each church. And a reminder about something else from last week's programme, the Hour of Prayer for Our Island that's taking place on Tynwald Hill this Tuesday, July the 6th, from 7 until 8 p.m. The Lonvain Ladies' Choir, directed by Mrs. Christine Bragazzi, will be giving a concert in St Thomas's Church in Finch Road here in Douglas on Wednesday evening at 7:45. Admission is free, donations would be most welcome, and there'll be refreshments after the concert. And there's a concert on Thursday night in St Catherine's Church in Port Erin. It'll be given by Manx Voices, again starting at 7:45 with free admission, refreshments in the hall afterwards, and the opportunity to give to a retiring collection at the end. And that's all we have time for today. Just a little reminder that if you'd prefer to start your day with this programme, At Your Service is available as a podcast from 7 o'clock each Sunday morning, accessible via our website, manxradio.com, and on all the main podcast platforms too. News for the notice board and requests for your favourite hymns to be included in future programmes can all be sent to me via email, judithleigh@manxradio.com. I'll be back tonight at 9 with Sundown, easy listening music to round off your weekend. But for now, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week, and a very good morning.